Hello, thank you for joining us today. We will get started in just a few minutes. All right. Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us today. My name is Paul Bierman. I'm the Director of Education and Events for SNEB. Welcome to today's Journal of Nutrition, Education, and Behavior Journal Club webinar, part of a series of 11 webinars with a focus on nutrition education programs and implications from the field. A special thank you to the SNEB Food and Nutrition Extension Education Division for helping select articles from the journal showcasing the work of cooperative extension nutrition educators. As the official peer-reviewed journal of the Society for Nutrition Education and Behavior, JNEB advances nutrition education and behavior-related research, practice, and policy. Before we begin, I'd like to review a few pieces of information with you. A handout will be made available of today's presentation. We will take questions at the end of the presentation. Throughout the presentation, please type any questions you may have into either the Q&A box or the chat, and they will be moderated out to our panelists. When the webinar ends today, you'll be prompted to complete a short survey. Please take a moment to complete this survey as your feedback is greatly appreciated for future SNEB webinars. This webinar is being recorded and will be available free of charge to SNEB members in the webinar section of the website. Finally, watch for a follow-up email to be sent in the next few days, which will include a link to the recording for this session, the handouts, and your CEU certificate for your attendance today. I can now hand things over to our moderator, Dr. Kristen DiFilippo, teaching assistant professor at the University of Illinois. Kristen?
Thank you. Thank you, Paul. And thank you to our presenters for joining us today. I get the privilege of introducing them. Latrice Rollins is an assistant professor at Morehouse School of Medicine in the Department of Community Health and Preventive Medicine and Prevention Research. Dr. Rollins is a Robert Wood Johnson Foundation Culture of Health leader whose work focuses on father engagement and father inclusive practices in health and human services. She is the principal investigator for several community-based participatory research studies focused on father engagement in areas such as maternal and child health and violence prevention. Sarah Hennis is the state program coordinator for UGA FNEP. Sarah's work focuses on both adult and youth community nutrition education, program evaluation, and community-based participatory research with limited resource families, pregnant women and teens, and youth age 9 through 12th grades. Sarah's research and programming also involves collaborating with other Extension Department colleagues, such as SNAP-Ed and 4-H, and developing a variety of community partnerships through the state for nutrition, health, and wellness. Other areas of research and research interest include utilizing clinical and community nutrition background to develop programs and interventions for overweight youth and their families, particularly in underserved populations. Our next speaker is Tiara Giddings. Dr. Giddings served as the research assistant on Project DINE and expertly managed participants and partners in the project. Chris White is the executive director and founder of Father Movement. He leads fatherhood programs specifically in the maternal child health space and assists programs with father recruitment and retention. I want to thank all of them for joining us today. And at this point, I can pass it over to our presenters.
All right. Hello, everyone. Thank you all so much for joining this webinar. Thank you to the Society for Nutrition, Education, and Behavior for inviting us to talk more about our project. It is called Project DINE, Dads in Nutrition Education, and we specifically will be focusing on our journal article called The Design and Implementation of Breastfeeding and Nutrition Education for Black Expecting Mothers and Fathers. We don't have any potential or actual conflict of interest to report in relation to this presentation. As far as the educator competencies, we're looking forward to you all being able to gain some experience in the areas of behavior and education, programming, also nutrition education programs as it relates to process and outcome evaluations and the ways that we analyze, evaluate, and look at nutrition education research. So this program was initially started given the Black maternal mortality crisis that we are especially experiencing across the country, but particularly in Georgia. Georgia has been listed as one of the most riskiest places to give birth. And so we do understand that Black women in particular are three times more likely to die from pregnancy-related deaths. And we understand that those deaths, for the most part, are preventable. In 2010, excuse me, the Commission on Paternal Involvement in Pregnancy Outcomes strongly recommended that fathers be included in prenatal care to reduce and eliminate the racial and ethnic disparities in perinatal health outcomes. But we also know that when you look at maternal and child health, it is called maternal and child health. And so a lot of times fathers are not included in a lot of the care that happens. But there's been research that shows that when fathers are involved in the pregnancy, mothers are almost 1.5 times more likely to go to prenatal care. There's also decreased risk for maternal psychosocial stress. Additionally, when fathers are involved in pregnancy, there's positive maternal behaviors. So that also relates to the issue we're going to talk about today, including their dietary intake. But that dietary intake and many of the other factors with dad being positively involved leads to reduced risk of preterm labor. It also leads to reduced risk of low birth weight. So there are also benefits for the baby when dads are engaged. So knowing all of this, we saw an opportunity through the Office of Minority Health to address two health topics. And one of the health topics was maternal mortality and morbidity. And the other topic that we selected was nutrition. When we look at the theoretical framework for this particular study, we chose the social ecological model for maternal mortality, which talks about beyond just looking at mom's kind of physical health. We also need to look at what's going on within her family, what's also going on within the community, the healthcare system, and then also this kind of historical context of racism. So there are multiple factors that contribute to maternal mortality and morbidity. And as I mentioned earlier, a lot of times, even though there is evidence that shows that father involvement can lead to reduced risk, it often is not something that's regularly looked at or regularly implemented in maternal and child health. And so this was an opportunity for us to look at maternal mortality, look at nutrition, and also engage fathers in those areas. We also kind of came about doing this study through a community-based participatory approach, meaning that we work with community-based organizations and fathers such as Chris White, who you'll hear from today, to really let us know how we could make a difference in this space and how we could go about doing this study. The idea of looking at nutrition and looking at father engagement came from community, came from Chris, who was working with various organizations to figure out how could we get and address kind of food security issues in the community, make sure that people are eating healthier so that we can address those issues of hypertension and diabetes and various things that may lead to risk in a pregnancy. And so this community-based participatory research not only went with identifying what the issue was that we wanted to study, but how do we go about doing it? How are the different steps of the research process? How do we recruit? How do we retain people? What's going to be attractive? How are the surveys administered? And, you know, there was great debate about those surveys, but even still, just in every step of the process, making sure that our community members, our community partners were engaged throughout this research process. So that's just a bit on that. So with the goals and outcomes of Project DINE, as I said, Project Dads in Nutrition Education, our goal was to expand and strengthen statewide partnerships. So working with our academic, state, and community partners and looking specifically at programs that were already kind of working in these spaces, but were somewhat siloed. And so how do we strengthen these partnerships, particularly when these organizations are working with some of the same families and trying to get the same outcomes? How do they get to work together to have more collective impact? So that was one of our goals. We also, of course, wanted to decrease maternal mortality and morbidity by increasing nutrition and breastfeeding knowledge, increasing breastfeeding and nutrition support, particularly from fathers, improving nutritional and health outcomes, increasing the rates of breastfeeding initiation. And then, of course, wanting to increase father engagement in the maternal health space. So making sure that it wasn't just mothers who were receiving education and services, but engaging fathers, particularly in the nutrition and breastfeeding education. And because we were working with Healthy Start programs, really increasing their capacity to involve fathers in maternal health during and after the pregnancy. Talking a little bit about our study design, we had a 2x2 kind of model where we had a intervention sites and standard sites. So meaning that we worked with Healthy Start programs in Georgia, six programs, three kind of did their Healthy Start program as usual. Early on, we met with them to ask if they had any kind of structured nutrition education or anything that they did specifically around nutrition education, and they did, and they did, you know, maybe touch on some things here and there, but there wasn't anything structured. So anyways, we wanted to see, you know, how their standard program compared if we were to modify and add nutrition education, which was delivered by our University of Georgia's Expanded Food and Nutrition Education Program. and the breastfeeding education as delivered by our WIC program, Women, Infant, and Children's Program. And so we had three sites to do this kind of modified approach. This 2x2 factor study design allowed us to test the effectiveness of the program, but it also allowed us to test the involvement, whether fathers were involved in the education or the intervention or not. So we had mothers and fathers to participate in the program together. And then we also had mothers who were participating in the program on their own. In order for the participants to be in the program, they had to be participants in the Healthy Start program. They also had to be pregnant or expecting a baby at the time and identify as Black or African American. So I am going to turn it over to Dr. Hennis, who is going to talk about the nutrition education that was provided to our participants. And Sarah, I will just, you can tell me next slide and I'll advance for you.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Dr. Rollins. Hi, everyone. Yes. And as Dr. Rollins mentioned, the nutrition education intervention was provided by our UGA, University of Georgia Cooperative Extension, and the Expanded Food and Nutrition Education Program. For those of you who don't know, the FNEP, as we call, has been around since 1969, I'm sorry, and has actually been in Georgia, disseminated through UGA Cooperative Extension since 1969. It is the first nutrition education program for limited resource audiences to include caretakers of children. And what was so nice about this project and kind of how it was a nice natural fit is that a priority audience for FNEP is pregnant women and teens and their families. And so that was a really nice fit into this program. Food Talk, which is our curriculum, our nutrition curriculum for adults, is an interactive eight lesson series. And so one of the benefits, I think, too, of FNEP as the nutrition intervention is that it wasn't just a one and done kind of one lesson. It's built on each other for eight lessons once a week over 8 weeks. And it really works to promote nutrition and behavior change for all participants over time. And to get to those controversial nutrition education surveys, we are actually mandated, well, let me back up. We're funded through USDA NIFA, and we're actually mandated by NIFA to provide pre and post nutrition education surveys, which are 30 question questionnaires to our adult participants at the first session and then at the last session. And the idea is that we look for nutrition and behavior change over time. And that actually gets entered into Webinars, which is the central database for FNEP across the country. And then if you look on the FNEP website, you see yearly updates in terms of our outcomes. And if you could go to the next slide, Dr. Rollins. Thank you. A big tenant of FNEP is that we teach to improve these five areas: diet quality, food safety, food resource management, food security, and physical activity. So in terms of Project Dine, I think this really fit in well in addressing, say, food security or food resource management and diet quality in our pregnant women and fathers population in particular, although that we address that for all of our FNEP participants. As I mentioned before, it is a nutrition series over about 8 weeks. And, you know, what was interesting is that we started this project in the midst of the pandemic. And so we were doing virtual programming, and then we were able to go to do our in-person programming, which we do food demos and recipe sampling as well. Thank you. We can go to the next slide.
I'll ask Dr. Giddings to share a bit about the breastfeeding education that was provided.
So for our breastfeeding education, we had a one-hour session that included a 45-minute video that was developed by our partners at Georgia WIC, called In the Zone for a Win, Advancing Breastfeeding Through Teamwork. And in addition, we had a pre and post breastfeeding education survey to measure knowledge regarding breastfeeding. In terms of the content of the education session, the video began with information regarding maternal mortality, specifically within Georgia, and really highlighting the racial disparities in maternal mortality, as well as breastfeeding data in terms of rates of breastfeeding initiation among mothers in Georgia as well. The video went on to describe the health benefits of breastfeeding and really highlighting not only the benefits for a baby, which is more commonly known, but also the health benefits for the mother as well. And innovatively, the video particularly focuses on father's role in the breastfeeding experience and how they can support their partners with breastfeeding and providing strategies for success for both parents. So it takes participants through the first 3 days after birth, what they can expect in terms of how often they should be breastfeeding, and just other information and guidance around fathers really being advocates for their partners. So it uses a sports theme to capture and engage the attention of the fathers and really seeing how they can support their partners, whether it is being that advocate with healthcare providers, whether it's, for example, having skin-to-skin contact with the baby and allowing the mom to rest during that time, and just other strategies and ways that they can support and meet the recommended 6 months of exclusive breastfeeding. Next.
Okay, and we, as a part of the evaluation, besides the pre and post surveys, we also wanted to get some feedback from the dad. So, Chris, you can tell us a bit about the father focus groups.
Absolutely. So, as you see here, MSM was the facilitator, and we had a 10 fathers who participated over two groups. So it was definitely a very intimate setting, which we still received a lot of valuable feedback. Next slide, please. So these focus groups focused on obviously on Project Dime, which was the nutrition, breastfeeding, but also we talked about services and support. We talked about their experiences with the maternal child health space, with healthcare providers, things like that. And then we did ask for some recommendations on what we could do to improve things for them in their overall experience. Next slide, please.
And this is Dr. Hennes, you're back up to tell
Oh,
us
great.
about the results.
Thank you. So yes, just a piece of the results are in terms of our nutrition intrication, when we looked at those five core areas that I was talking about, diet quality, food resource management, food safety, physical activity, and food security, we got some really nice numbers in terms of our overall participation. And this is specifically for our fiscal year 21 and 22, I believe. And so we had about 92 participants in Project Nine. And what was really cool was to see that 96% of our Project Nine graduates improved in their diet quality in terms of eating fruits and vegetables and drinking less sugary drinks. And this was statistically significant improvement over the course of their time with FNEP. In terms of food resource management for things like cooking dinner at home and comparing food prices, we saw an improvement in 86% of our graduates as well. For food safety, 63% had an improvement in things like washing hands before preparing cooking and washing all items. 58% had an increase in physical activity, so exercising for at least 30 minutes or changes to making small changes to be more active. And we had a little bit of less in terms of food security at this time, considering this was also during the pandemic. But things like not eating less so that there's food for family and having enough money for food, we did see some improvement with our graduates as well in this area. Thank you. The next slide.
So for our breastfeeding education results, I forgot to mention this previously, but the format for our pre and post breastfeeding education surveys, which first it included true and false statements regarding breastfeeding with all of the information that was presented in the education video. And so our post survey included additional items where we asked participants to share their level of agreement with the content and delivery of the information. So whether the information was presented clearly and easy to understand, if the class was engaging, and we also wanted to learn a little bit about their plans to exclusively breastfeed their baby. And as the graph shows, the majority of the participants agreed or strongly agreed that the information was presented clearly, the session was engaging, and they do plan to exclusively breastfeed. In terms of our other items, we saw a statistically significant increase in the percentage of correct answers from the participants from the pre-survey to the post-survey as well, where the percentage increased from 78% to 84%. Our post survey also included a qualitative item where we asked participants to share any new information that they learned specifically from attending this session. And just to highlight some of the responses from the fathers, many of them shared that most of the information that was presented was new to them. But they also learned about the benefits of breastfeeding. And again, not just the benefits for the baby, but also for the mom in ways such as reducing the risk of breast cancer. And tapping back into the beginning of the video where it talks about rates of maternal mortality and rates of breastfeeding, and also some of the strategies for success and just understanding what to expect in terms of how many times a day that breastfeeding should occur was also new to the parents. And the dads highlighted how they really understood and came to learn how their participation is beneficial for the baby and the mom as well.
So along the lines of that qualitative information, some of the feedback we received from dads was really promising and exciting, to be honest with you. I look over here, my wife and I went on, have been living together since 2017. We did make it a habit of going to the grocery store together, mainly because we hit so many. You know, they were visiting Kroger and Farmer's Market once a week. So they did shop together and they both cooked. And this was something that we saw as a reoccurring theme where many of the dads were heavily involved in the preparing of meals. There were others, however, who learned an appreciation for this, right? And then they began to do more cooking, which was pretty exciting. I continue down to the bottom right. Again, Dad, I do 90% of the cooking, always have. It's probably my second favorite thing to do. I try to do most of the grocery shopping. I cook everything well, if I'm being honest with you. But what do I actually cook? It's pretty much whatever. I have all sons. It's been pretty much consistently doing that for their entire lives. So again, very promising that these dads are involved in the nutrition of their families. Here's another one as we go go clockwise. I didn't play a role in it per se. There's nothing I can do but grab bottles out the fridge as he's talking about providing nutrition for his infant. You know, so far as feeding goes, I had no role in that, but I grabbed bottles, warm bottles, wash bottles well. And this is something else we saw is Dad thinks he has no role, but clearly he's playing a role, right? He's doing what he can to be supportive. We've seen this in other dads too, where they said, I don't really know how this impacted me. And then they start to go on the ways that it has impacted them and changed their lives. So it's been very cool. Next slide, please. All right, so here we are. Everybody's different. Women adjust differently, babies adjust differently, and everybody breasts aren't the same. we don't understand breastfeeding. Getting this knowledge is very helpful in the way in which we relate to our partner and support our partner as they try to breastfeed and provide healthy nutrition for infant, toddler, and on and on. So just learning the different techniques and methods and how breasts actually work to produce milk, it was very informative. I will read another one, the bottom right. This class kind of brought me and, you know, my fiance together as one to be able to cook together. I didn't like being in the kitchen, but it kind of helped. It kind of brought me into, you know, seeing another side and helping out. So these dads are being informed. And you know what they say, when you know better, you do better. So that's been a very positive outcome, is how we bring families together around the kitchen. I'll also go down here to the bottom left. I felt like she gave good advice. This is breastfeeding. You know, for me to sit down with my wife and for us to discuss, like, hey, you know, we're supposed to be eating this many type of veggies. I'm sorry, she's talking actually about Ruta from the FNEP classes, food talk classes, you know, throughout the week. And, you know, we came together and now we're planning meals instead of just going out to, you see here, Zaxby's, which is a fast food restaurant here in Atlanta area. So it's helped a lot. We've done a lot better. Next slide, please. Seeking more knowledge. I guess this is me as well. Says, what can we do differently here? I think I would appreciate a section or a week or whatever dedicated to mental and emotional effects of eating. We receive a lot of great feedback from our families, and our families are even more well-informed than we know of. They may not have this particular set of knowledge, but they have a lot of the knowledge that they gather from other sources. And it really helps to inform the way in which we interact with our families. So this was very helpful for us. Going to the right here, I told her that she should keep trying, because even she didn't want to feed him for her breast, she should try to freeze the milk. So this is dad offering encouragement to breastfeeding, which we know can improve outcomes. She can still have the milk, but she was saying that they hurt even when she pumped. Maybe the ways for the soreness and stuff to go away, because she was saying her nipples were sore. So he's asking for a little more information on that. How can we alleviate some of that discomfort that mom's experiencing? And then we'll go down to postpartum, bottom right. Postpartum, as you know, a lot of women go through that. Sometimes that stuff breaks up a home. It don't be a child, just, you know, the issues, the mental health that comes with new parenting as far as birthing a child. And it continues on. I think that you do need to be able to have those sessions with people to get through that. Because, I mean, I'm sure all kids want both their parents in their lives. This is it in a nutshell. You know, we don't have a full understanding of postpartum. This is moms and dads, of course, but especially dads, we don't understand it. When we see a change in behavior, we are thinking of the person that we made this baby with and the way they're acting and how things are changing. And so we can't grasp this idea of, well, she's going through all these changes and it may be postpartum. This may be something different than what I'm used to experience. So we need to be well-informed there, so we know how to treat that, how to help mom go through these difficult challenges. Next slide, please. All right, group class structure. Is this me, Dr. Rollins? I will continue on.
It's you, and the next slide is you as well. We got a lot of father feedback.
We sure did. And who better than a father to share this with you all? Group class structure. It also helped that was something that my wife could attend. And this is something that we see in our work is silos. Dr. Rollins mentioned them with the providers. We do this with our classrooms and our training programs. We have a safe space for dad aside from mom, and that's valuable. But we've seen a lot of parents express, we want something that moms and dads can participate in together and get the knowledge that will provide a healthy footing for everybody, right, to raise our children in. And if there's anything I would really say, I feel like the communication from the father's side is amazing. I haven't gotten the same, you know, feeling from woman's side. So this is a dad who, you know, had a really good relationship with a father coordinator, but didn't see the same kind of communication coming from the moms on the Healthy Start program. And he was expressing, you know, there needs to be greater communication from the women that she works with, the mom works with. I should give you a little bit of context here. We ran fatherhood parenting classes alongside our nutrition classes. We did that because we had some really good participation in our fatherhood classes, and we kind of struggled initially with our nutrition classes. And so when we combined them and just ran them back to back, 1 hour leading into the next, we greatly improved our participation. So this dad goes on to say, we talked about in dad's class too, as far as like, you know, as men, as fathers, we don't really look into ourselves like that. But, you know, just doing the class kind of like made you think about it. This is, you know, dad being introduced to knowledge, to experiences from other fathers, sharing that, you know, perspective and really opening up his mind to these things that he may not have thought of otherwise. Like, it's not bad, you know, to get yourself checked out, because how are you going to be healthy? How are you going to be a good dad if your health is bad? So you see, you know, we're talking now even about checkups, which we touch on as well. And we know that our dads really struggle with this, especially as they're younger, getting checked up, making sure that they are healthy and preventing any issues. We talk about the health disparities in the maternal child health space. Those same disparities exist when you talk about overall health, and that's because a lot of it isn't being prevented. We're not jumping in there and getting a doctor's visit done like we should. I'll do this bottom left one and then we'll move on. Definitely benefited because it created the space for discussion. The group gave us an opportunity to start the conversation and bounce some ideas off of one another. And our dads really appreciate being able to have dialogue and not just sit here quietly and listen like you all are doing. Our dads can tend to struggle with that a little more. So we like to make all of our sessions very interactive so that we can retain their attention. And also it just adds to the overall richness of the group. He goes on down here. So I appreciated that. Like I said, that the space was given and dedicated. We had good fellowship. We definitely grew as people, not just information wise, but also with relationships. And you see, we did, right? So he could be talking about his relationship with his partner, but he's probably talking about we as a collective, all the participants in the group, the community. Next slide, please. I think we skipped one. Okay, this is it here. Okay, definitely making sure you know. Okay, so go bottom left. Reaching fathers, how do we do this? Definitely making sure you know whatever resources, I guess, that might be brought up in a group setting or issues that might be brought up. Just make sure that those resources are consistently available whenever it may be. We move over here to the right. I feel like when they send out information or tell you something's coming up, usually it's like directed towards the mom. You know what I mean? It's like moms, we have that. They should say families, like mom and dad. This is, again, him. He wants to see inclusion, right? We find a lot of these spaces aren't very father focused or friendly. And these dads definitely feel that. They notice it. And saying family is more inclusive. And in fact, even better, calling out dad specifically in any sort of promotions is really helpful to make dads know he's welcome in this space, because dads often feel excluded in this. Even historically, culturally, they may not feel like this is a place for dads. And so we need to make sure that we are spelling this out for dads and going above and beyond to know that they are included, because it's important for mom and improving health outcomes. Top left, I think someone like father coordinator, you know, people that have experience dealing with those type of things that we're talking about. I mean, you can really teach me something you haven't done. You can't really teach me something you haven't done. So this is an expression that the coordinator needs to be authentic. They want to work with people that have been there before, people they can identify with. this goes a long way to helping dads receive what you were trying to teach them and take it one step further, them actually putting it into practice in their own lives. Next slide, please.
All right, now it's back to me. Thank you, Chris. You know, a wonderful job sharing all of our qualitative results. As you can see with the design of this research, we did have the pre-post surveys. We also had the qualitative to kind of give us some of that information about the process of the intervention, as well as what they thought about outcomes. But we also did interviews as well with our partners, including Chris, including Dr. Hennis, and those other folks at the six sites that we work with to, again, kind of understand what were some of the factors that would help explain the implementation of the program and, again, how to be successful in what we were attempting to do. And so just a few takeaways from the Key Informant interviews. Before we conclude, the flyers, social events, and community canvassing, those were great, effective recruitment strategies for the Healthy Start sites. So again, they had to be Healthy Start participants to be involved in Project Dine. And so we, Dr. Giddens created a number of resources, whether it was videos, whether it was like maps to show them, like, these are the steps, this is what the what your participation in the program looks like. Giving those to the Healthy Start program staff who were recruiting for us, allowing them to use those, us also attending community events and sharing those flyers were great kind of recruitment strategies. We also used a system called Ripple Science, which allowed you to send out emails as well as texts to the participants to let them know, you know, they had a survey that they need to complete, or, you know, sessions were coming up, whatever, but also the Healthy Start staff were also using text and email and phone call to remind and keep folks engaged in the process. We also did some social media to increase the reach and recruitment, the financial incentives. So although participating in Healthy Start is free, it's usually, you know, led by a community-based organization or health department, it's free for them to participate, usually don't give away things for you to participate in these educational programs, but because this was a research study and we were asking people for their time, their opinions and things, we did compensate them. And so those financial incentives were great for Healthy Start because they're like, well, we don't usually pay people to come to various things or do the various events, but you all are going to give them a gift certificate and various things that will help us as well. So those financial incentives were great. And it wasn't only financial, like the gift cards and that, but some of the sites were very creative in what they decided to give, whether they were diapers or I think one of the sites decided to give a crib or, you know, car seat, like various things that they said the parents needed and they wanted to make sure that they had access to that. Continued clear communication. So we met as a team bi-weekly just to share what was going well, what challenges we were having. There was some productive kind of healthy competition among sites at times. They're like, oh my goodness, you all recruited 20. How did you all do that? You know, so blah, blah, blah. So folks had an opportunity to share best practices in real time and just kind of continue to be clear about the goals. If there were new challenges that were coming up, and not particularly a challenge, but one site wanted to make this program open to teenage parents as well. And that hadn't been something that we thought about initially, but that was the reality of their particular community. And so we worked together to incorporate that into the project. So those types of things were very important, you know, to make sure that we were communicating on a regular basis. So in conclusion, you definitely can see from results that the nutrition and breastfeeding education, it did increase folks' knowledge. It did have statistically significant improvements in the diet quality, meaning as Dr. Hennis shared, more folks were eating fruits and vegetables, they were decreasing their sugary beverages, and that's, you know, what we wanted to see. Additionally, with the nutrition and breastfeeding education during the pregnancy, that can help to promote some change, particularly in those individual behaviors. And we're hoping that, you know, if that is a behavior that continues, it can reduce the number of pregnancy-related incidences in terms of death and disease. We do understand that there is a need from, doing this project, there is a need to kind of culturally tailor some of these interventions, being very cognizant of what's happening in individual communities. We didn't go into it, but one of the things that we laughed about is with the food safety module and kind of areas with the FNET program, they talk about, rinsing, do not rinse meat, and things like that. And for, the Black community, that's like, we are going to rinse the meat. Like we're not going to just go straight from the package to the skillet.
We lost
like,
people.
Yeah, so that was just going to be a question that was not going to be answered correctly because they just were not going to receive that information. But anyway, that was just something we kind of just laughed about. But again, just, making sure recipes, all of those things, very, culturally appropriate, all of the things to really engage this community. And so we are hoping that this study continues to encourage people to include fathers, particularly Black fathers, in their strategies, in their various interventions around maternal and child health, around nutrition, because we know from some other results that our fathers do very well also in terms of increasing their vegetable intake and all of those things that maybe they would not have done had they not received the information. And so continue to include the dads in your efforts and in your strategies. So with that, we definitely thank you for your time and look forward to any questions that you all have for us.
Thank you so much. As people have questions, if you want to put those in the Q&A box, I know some questions that have come through already include some people affirming they've done some focus groups and found similar results. Also, another attendee reaching out and wanting to connect and collaborate. So thank you for answering that question and being willing to collaborate with other people. One question that I had, and I do apologize that my internet was dropping in and out during your presentation, but one question that I had, you had mentioned that this was done during the pandemic. Is there anything you would do differently going forward in kind of the post-pandemic realm?
Dr. Hennis, you want to take that? And I think Chris has something as well.
Well, while she's gathering her thoughts on that, I'll eat up that dead space. We tried to do an in-person and it was not as well attended. I think families, we know COVID forever changed us, and so I think these families that were introduced to us in a COVID environment were accustomed to doing things virtually. And so when we tried to do a hybrid, we had plenty of participation online, but the people actually got in their car and came to see us or walked or took a bus was very small when we compared to what we used to get before COVID. So we've seen some challenges in trying to do things in person again because so many people enjoy the virtual sessions.
It's really interesting to hear and definitely a neat thing to think about going forward is what is the best way to reach people. And it sounds like for your group, it was virtual. That's really neat.
I'm sorry if I can just also apologize. I think that we were able to be FNEP was able to be in the virtual space, and I think that, as we kind of heard, was good. But one of the benefits of FNEP being face to face, it's led by the peer educator model. So the peer educators are they're hired in the communities that they serve, and they tend to build trust with participants. And one of the cool things about FNEP and our curriculum, even though we're making some adaptations actually to our curriculum right now to be more pregnancy focused, that's another research study we actually have going on right now, but is that we do food demonstrations and recipe samplings with each lesson. And also we provide what's called educational extenders. Our funding agency does not let us say incentives, but these educational extenders are things like a menu planner or a grocery bag or water bottle or something that goes along with the lesson that's being taught so that participants can practice. And so I think, you know, to Chris's point, yes, I think our participants kind of got used to that virtual space. I think it's kind of getting back, and our state has, you know, come back. We are doing in-person programming now. And also realizing the benefits of being in person and that sense of community, the fact that they can actually taste recipes, the fact that they can get educational extenders in the moment. We did try to mail their educational extenders after we went through the 8 lessons. Of course, we couldn't do the food demos virtually. So hoping that as we continue, I mean, because FNEP just is continuing throughout the state of Georgia, and kind of seeing the benefits of in-person programming too. I don't know if the team wanted to expand on that.
You all did a great job.
Thank you. Another question. Adrian says, thank you. I think working with families and parents is an important and missed strategy for racial and economic equity. Do you see it through that lens? And is there more work you would like to do around families and parents?
Yes, absolutely. Definitely embracing the equity lens with this work. I think that was the whole focus and making sure that we included fathers when you look at like who's being left out, you know, who could actually benefit from this. And we see in the literature all of these positive, you know, results when fathers are engaged. What is the issue in terms of, you know, including them in these different sessions? And so we found a way to make it work and make it go into the routine of these Healthy Start programs and what they were doing. And so there is a lot more work to do, I think, in this space of maternal and child health in terms of engaging fathers. But even beyond that, I think that we have a legacy of separating individuals. You know, it's children here, we have mothers here, we have fathers here, we have grandparents here. That's just not really how folks live. That's not how we even operate in community and in our families. So we need to really be more practical and realistic in not only our research, but even the interventions and programs that we're doing. So beyond maternal and child health, I mean, pretty much any topic that touches families, I think we can apply an equity lens and a more inclusive strategy to.
Yeah, thank you so much. I really appreciate that. It's been great to hear about your work and everything you've done to support families and support families through fathers. So thank you for sharing with us today. And I appreciate all the time you've taken for that. At this point, I can pass it back to Paul.
Thank you, Kristen. And thank you to our panelists today. We appreciate you coming to share your knowledge and more about your work with us. I have just a few reminders before I close today's session. Again, please complete the survey you'll receive after we close out today's session. Your feedback is greatly appreciated. Be on the lookout for an email with today's recording, the handouts, and your CEU certificate. And finally, if you enjoyed today's webinar, be sure to check out the upcoming webinar section of the website. Journal Club continues next Monday. With that, thank you for joining us and have a great day.
Thank you all. See ya.